You have to answer for this nerd podcast mafia, Dave. You fingered her podcast to be associated with Dork of All Trades and Geek Yogurt?
Ben, you got it all wrong.
Ah, that little farce you played with old Johnny. You think that'll fool the beard?
It's innocent. I swear on our podcast.
Sit down.
Please, the Nerd Podcast Mafia. They're good people. A respectable group of like-minded podcasts that support and promote each other. I listen to So Wizard and Fans on Patrol all the time. And there are a number of other great podcasts in the mix. Just check them out at nerdpodcastmafia.com for yourself.
You make me an offer I cannot refuse.
Thank you. Now leave the cape. Take a cannoli.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm yours, Dave.
And I'm still getting over a little bit of the con crud, but I'm John. How you doing, guys?
Yes, so we're continuing on with our lovely, wonderful, abundant coverage of the Philadelphia.
Yes, abundant. You said a bun.
Somebody's been hitting the blackberry brandy pretty hard tonight.
No, not yet. But now that you've reminded me, thank you very much. I just
smooth. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, I'm ready now. Well, that's some liquid courage right there.
So we got four more interviews up here this week, or this episode, and the first one up to bat, I have to say, John, this might be one of the biggest names we've ever had on this podcast.
Just because it took 2 years of planning, a couple of bribes, and a Rube Goldberg-esque type plan... doesn't mean that, you know, just, sure, it happened by accident.
Yes.
By accident, yeah.
No, it's, of course, we're talking about the Counselor Troi herself, the one and only Marita Sirtis.
Oh my God.
Mess that up?
Because you're just in awe of her beauty and her amazing talent.
Yes, yes, that's true. I believe.
And her personality. Let it be said. That woman does not mess around. That woman is there. She's got personality to spare. She's awesome. Yeah. Meeting her was actually really, really cool.
Yes, I wouldn't know because, you know, boys and girls, our co-host here went and did the interview without me on Friday.
By accident.
And, yeah, so I'm without a Counselor Troi story.
Well, you know, next time, dude.
Next time.
Right. Get behind again. sorry.
So.
I managed to catch her at a time when she didn't have anybody at her booth, and she was gracious enough to grant me a few minutes, and she's just, she's a really nice, very, forceful personality up close. She's a really cool person to be around. That's all I can give you because as soon as I turned on the microphone, I just completely blanked.
Well, wait.
So those of you listening that are going to listen to this interview, I don't remember any of it. So maybe you can post in Twitter what the hell I asked, because I have no
idea.
How
about we listen to it right now so we can remember what you said? Let's see.
This is John O'Grady, Superhero Speak, and I'm talking with Marita Sirtis. Pleasure meeting you.
Lovely to meet you too, John.
So, you're here at a convention. How many conventions do you plan to do this year, and how's it treating you?
I think I'm doing about 10 this year. This is my second one. So yeah, I've got a busy year when it comes to conventions. And I love them. I love them. I get to meet my fans. I get to thank them for my blessed life, which they gave me, and get to hang out with my friends. There's no downside. Let's put it that way.
So you don't mind the fandom and all that? I mean, I've met a lot of people that have said that, you know, they don't like being pigeonholed, or they want to talk about their other work. And I mean, I know you've done a lot. I've seen you do bit pieces too on stuff like Stargate, but how does the fandom treat you? They just...
Well, the fans treat me great, and people who don't appreciate the fans need a smack on the head, because it's because of the fans that we have these great lives. You know, you could be the greatest actor in the world, but it's no one's turning their TV set on to watch you. You may as well be acting in your garage, right? So, in my opinion, we owe everything to the fans, and I get very cross with people in show business who forget that.
Well, along those lines then, the body of work that you've done, and I'm seeing quite a... Oh, that's right. And you were also...
Demona.
Oh, yeah. Great work there. And Gargoyles, so that you can see. Did you have... This is probably like asking you to choose between babies. Did you have a favorite that you like, or a particular show that you had the most fun with?
That would be Star Trek, because we were a family. We laughed for 7 years, literally laughed for 7 years. And these guys are my family. I like doing other shows, obviously, but I think my experience on Star Trek will never be repeated.
Because of the number of outtakes you were able to piece together?
No, it was just that it was like lightning in a bottle. This cast was just extraordinary. Not just in talent and ability, but in personality and goodness. We had no divas. We had no, tantrums. We didn't have any of that. We were an ensemble, even though, you know, officially Patrick was the captain and the star of the show. We were a real ensemble cast, and no one behaved like they were the star of the show. So, like I said, I think it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm so happy that I was part of that cast.
Well, even back then, I mean, it was kind of unusual to have an ensemble cast. There were usually one or two main characters, and throughout the 7 years, you all given time to really flesh out your characters to Deanna Troi, like, dating... Worf, I mean, which nobody expected, but I mean, so the writing was very good, and it was a good thing to see that you got a lot of screen time. After that ended, what'd you do after that? I mean,
I've done so much. I do a lot of independent films. I'm the head of Mossad on NCIS. I pretty much did all the sci-fi shows, you know, that were on back in the 90s. I do theater. I do everything. I do voiceovers. I do everything. I pretty much kept really busy, so can't complain.
Yeah, and the work that you have done is, like, people remember it. Like, even Gargoyles, which was only on for a couple of seasons, and people know that it was you. Not that they remember the voice, but they know you specifically. So, are you planning on doing anything now? Or
I just shot something that I can't talk about because it's, you know, in Hollywood, everything's a big secret now. I just shot 2 episodes of something else, and I just did a video game, and I did another voiceover for a show called OKKO. Yeah, so I keep busy, yeah.
Okay. Well, then, in that case, the one thing is that, you know, you say that those people that are angry at the fandom because they don't like being pigeonholed, the fans really appreciate, you know, all the work that you've done, and, you know, all the performances you've given, you know, make it really, it gives something back to us.
Oh,
so we're glad to give it back to you.
Well, that's the way it is, because, you know, everyone involved in a movie or a TV series, everyone is as important as anybody else. You know, the viewers are as important as the actors. On the set, everybody has their job that is essential to the making of that project. So I really don't think... I've never been one of those people that puts myself above say, the crew, because I'm an actor and they're a grip or an electrician or whatever. We are all vital to the process, from the makeup artists to the actors to craft service. We're all vital to the process. It's a total, total, you know, conglomeration of all these different skills. So we're all in it together.
Thank you very much. There's one question we tend to ask when we wrap things up. How do you measure success?
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, I think happiness is, that's, I mean, I'm a very happy person. I mean, don't piss me off because I turn into the Hulk. I'm very un-Troy-like if you make me mad. But, yeah, I think it's not money, because I know some very rich and very miserable people. It's living each day like it's your last and being happy.
That's one of the best answers we've gotten. Thank you very much for your time, and hope to see you in more, as, you know, as the years come. You know?
Thank you, John.
And thank you.
Wow, John, you can actually hear the moment in that interview where you go from having a childhood crush on her to now being fully infatuated with her for the rest of your life.
Yeah, easily. Oh, anybody meeting her is going to be like that, women included.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. So the next one that we have, it's an interesting one. I am always happy to do ones like this because it was this woman's first ever convention where she was presenting her work. She had a table and she had a new comic out, and her name is Melissa Massey, and the name of her...
You got a name right. I'm so proud of you.
And the name of her comic was Vatican Assassin.
Yes. Now, there were a couple of, I'm not going to say religious themed, but religious toned independents scattered around the floor. And this was one of them. And as I was corrected, it is not about assassins trying to take out the Pope. At least that was my first take on the right. title, but you know, it's really amazing. The number of independent, publishers, independent writers, scattered all over the floor that were able to go from, hey, I think I want to write this comic book, from there all the way through to, hey, I'm sitting here at a convention with a comic book on the table and I'm trying to sell it to you. And, you know, this woman did it all on her own. We'll find out in the interview, but it was an interesting comic book. This is not one of the ones I got a copy of, unfortunately, but I am going to order it online because the concept was really interesting, which she'll explain.
Yes, yes. And real quick, yes. Yes, John is right. She did this all on her own. Not only did she write it, she drew the art. She colored it herself and got them printed up herself. So true independent spirit, as it were. And
and very talented, too, to be able to do all that.
Yes, and I think that's kind of what, you know, made her stand out when we were walking by. So without any further build up, here we go. Here's Melissa Massey.
Testing.
Testing.
Okay. Yep, this is Superhero Speak, and I'm John, and I am sitting here with Melissa J. Massey, who has written a comic book called Vatican Assassins. And we're sitting here at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. Hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. So I passed by your booth a couple of times, and you're one of quite a few independent people here that have gone through what, for all intents and purposes, is a wheel of torture to get through to the point where you've got an actual book on a table at a convention. So how did you find that process?
Actually, once I got going, it was a little easier than I thought it was going to be to lay out the book and print it. But getting there and actually finishing the book, that was a little tough. You know, each page takes so many hours. And when you work a day job like I do, it's really hard to find the time. You want to get it finished faster than you actually can, but you have to work with what you got.
And how long did it take to, where did the idea for this come from? How did this start?
Sure. Well, I studied art history in college, and I've always been interested in church architecture, and you know, I was raised Catholic, too. So all these together, and I was also into a lot of those anime that have religious themes to them. And then one night, I had this crazy dream of these two kids running around in Rome chasing a demon. When I woke up, I was like, oh, I got to remember that. So I wrote it down, and I kept playing with it and playing with it until it got to the story it is today.
So you sold me as a Catholic as well. You sold me right away with the title of the book. And again, I love the idea of the story. So though you do the art and wrote the book, is there a reason you just wanted to do both roles? Then you didn't bring an artist in or bring a writer in to help? Like, was it just because it was a passion project, or is there a reason you wanted to do both?
Definitely it's a passion project. I've always worked by myself. I've been doodling comics in some form since maybe I was about 9 or 10. And so that's always how I've worked. And I think so visually. For me, the word and the picture are so married together that to be able to separate that, it makes more sense for me to do it myself because I know exactly what I want.
Okay, I'll give you that. Is this a standalone story or issue one?
This is issue one, so okay. It'll probably run a few more years. Yeah, I got a lot in store for it.
Do you have a plan about how many books you want to do in total, or?
I'm not sure exactly. This is only the first chapter. I would like to eventually, when there's more chapters, start collecting them into fuller length books.
Right, right.
I don't know. So far, I'm looking maybe at about 20 or 30 chapters, but we'll have to see. I might start getting a little tired, and after 20 years, decide, maybe it's time to wrap it up. You know.
True.
So you got to this point. Now you have the book. There's no like imprint on the cover or anything. So how did you get these published?
I went through RA Comics Direct. They're just a print-on-demand service. They're really great. They helped me out a lot. They answered all my questions. So for anyone who's doing a first-time printing, I really recommend them because they do really help walk you through the process.
And it, from deciding that you were going to do this to having an actual finished product, how long did that take?
I mean, it's always been the dream to print a book and to do a print book. I think for this iteration and really deciding I was going to do this, maybe about a year, year and a half, you know, really thinking about it. And it's like, you know, you always want to get to that point and you always have an excuse for why you can't get there. And last year I decided enough excuses, I'm just going to do it and see what happens.
So as a Catholic, do you have any fear of pushback on the book?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been getting a few dirty looks from parents and older people, like, as they're walking by my table. But some people who are religious are really into it. They think it's really cool that I'm doing something a little different with the religious theme. But, you know, when you're tackling a subject like this, you're always going to get a mixed bag of reactions, and you just have to be ready for whatever you're going to get.
Right.
See, I'm not Catholic. I don't find this... how can you find this offensive? It's like, it's a book... Actually... Tell us about the general storyline, you know, with, like, spoilers or without spoilers. Because from what I see, it's a comic book and it sounds like an interesting concept.
Oh, yeah. I've been told some people describe it as religious magical girls, in a sense.
But what's the general gist of the story?
The general gist of the story is that the Vatican has this secret militia that goes around hunting demons that are trying to break into the human world. And these particular members are special because they're called blessed children. They get special powers from saints by calling on them, hence the magical girl part of it. But because they have these special powers, demons want to eat them to gain more power themselves. So it's this interesting dichotomy of going out and them fighting the demons that are also hunting them down.
That sounds actually really interesting. All right.
So it's a wholesome Sunday afternoon reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure a Bible study would love to have these. But yeah.
So as a woman, was it important to have a strong female lead character for you, or?
Oh, absolutely. When I was growing up, I actually wasn't into like superhero comics very much. I liked watching Batman on TV, but reading the comics didn't interest me because there weren't really any women in them. There weren't any girl characters. So when I started drawing my own stories, and this is also what drew me to anime so much, was that there were female characters, and I could make my own female characters. So obviously my comic also stars a female, Viola. She's kind of the brains of the operation. She's a girl, but she's a tomboy, but she's also doing her own thing, and that's what I like so much about her. She does what she feels is her, you know?
Yeah, we see that a lot these days. Like, even Xenoscope, they're all strong female characters. Right across the way, you've got Potential Comics. And so it's a good genre. A lot of people, even in novels, a lot of novels, they have a lot of new strong female characters that have come out over the last, say, 10, 15 years.
So since you grew up watching Batman, and I would assume, since you like strong female characters, you were a fan of Buffy, maybe?
Actually, no, I wasn't allowed to watch Buffy. I was too young when it came on TV.
All right. So, I don't know if you've heard the news. Joss Whedon has now announced that he's going to write and direct a Batgirl movie.
Oh, fantastic.
So, I say, is that something that you would be excited to see?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Captain Marvel coming out.
Yes.
Now that there's going to be a Batgirl movie, I think that's great. I think we need more, you know, movies about Batgirl and Batwoman, and I'd love to see a Black Canary movie.
Oh, yeah.
Zatanna. You know, there's so many great, especially in DC, female characters that I'd love to see more of on the big screen.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. So, looks like I'm getting the nod to wrap it up. The question that we usually like to end it on is, how do you measure success?
I guess if just more people came and started reading my comic and enjoy it, that would be success to me.
Cool. And where do they find your comic book?
They can find it online at VaticanAssassinsComic.com, or they can stop by my table here and pick up a copy. And they'll be for sale online as well.
Excellent. Any future conventions?
Yes, I got accepted into SPX in September in Bethesda, Maryland.
Oh, cool.
And we'll see where we go from there. Hopefully get into a few shows next year. We'd like to do KatsuCon and someday DragonCon.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and we'll... You know, hope to see you at future conventions, and hope to see episode 2 or volume 2, volume 3, whatever.
Yeah, chapter 2 is starting in a couple weeks, so thank you for stopping by, and I hope you continue to read the story.
Cool.
Thank you.
So, you know, that was a great story. I don't know. I kind of like your idea of people trying to kill the Pope, though. I mean, that's...
After talking with Melissa, I don't think she'd go
for it. No, I'm saying...
She might have other people trying to kill the Pope and her assassins stop them. But
yeah, that's true.
There you go. Assassins versus ninjas. Pope style.
Aren't ninjas
like
essentially assassins?
kind of.
So that was the one interview this episode I was a part of, because you know you were crazy running around.
Well, you got to do it while you have energy, or else, you know, because even a small one like this, and it's, okay, so the Great Philly Comic Con isn't small, it's a medium-sized one, and it's growing, but, you know, when you're on your feet for 8 to 10 hours a day with 30 pounds of audio equipment in a backpack, and you've got a bad back, and your ankle's still healing from injury a year ago, I'm telling you, the amount of painkillers you're already popping at the point, you have to get these numbers as many as you can. Because on Sunday, no, you just kind of peter out. You might as well. At that point, I'm basically, you know, sit at a booth and touch with people, because there's no way I'm up for interviewing anymore.
Yeah, that was
true. Okay, so these next guys are kind of sort of a team. We've got two interviews, one with KJ Kaminsky and one with Josh Dahl. Now, the first one with Kaminsky, he wrote, he's a writer, and he wrote a bunch of comics called The Resistance. Not The Resistance, The Resistance, T-A-N-T-S. And the other title is The Broadcast Offensive. So he'll talk about it, but the one spoiler I give you is that he had this idea for over 20 years. This sounds familiar to me. He's had this idea for a very, very long time, and him and a friend, which I believe was Dahl, he'll mention him in the interview. They used to come up with characters and as plot lines and that sort of thing for a while, for a very long time. And now he's sitting here with a comic with his own imprint, Blue Comic, and Josh Dahl will talk about in a second, his friend who also helped him on some of the comics and collaborated with him on some others that we'll talk about right after this. Anything you want to add to that, Dave?
No, I'm just proud that you talked to another Polak.
Okay, that's what.
Yeah, that's what I got.
All right.
So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here is KJ Kaminsky.
Okay. Very good. This is John O'Grady from Superhero Speak, and I am sitting here with KJ Kaminsky. Oh, thank the guys. We always get names wrong. Always. I think our tagline is, was it technical difficulties since 2013? So. I'm sitting here at your booth at the Great Philly Comic Con. You have a couple of comic books here that you've basically created out of whole cloth. So if you'd like to give me a rundown, yeah, you just gave me the spiel, but now I've got a microphone.
Right. excuse the pitch, but The Resistance is my new high-action science fiction comic series. It's about a group of alien refugees and human freedom fighters 100 years in the future fighting against an oppressive corporate state. But it's all about a big action and a fun comic book series.
Okay. And from what you were describing to me, you've had this idea for a very, very long time.
Yeah. I originally co-created most of these characters when I was 16 with one of my best friends who was an artist. We published a couple anthologies in the mid-90s with our characters. I went on to comic book retail, had my own shop, and a few years back I found myself in an opportunity where I could come back to it, and so in 2012 I started working on a new script, and in 2015 I hired an artist.
Well, throughout all that, I mean, what were like some of the biggest challenges you came up against? I mean, this has got to be hard to come up with. You came up with the idea. You managed to go after a couple of years to actually having comics on a table. I mean, like, what was the hardest thing that you found getting to this point?
I think people taking you seriously when you talk to people and you say, hey, I want to make a comic. I have this idea. At comic conventions, a lot of people come up with their ideas. It wasn't until I actually had a book in my hand that really people started taking me seriously. And I started making more connections with artists and colorists.
Well, given, I mean, the books look great.
Thank you.
I'm saying they look great. You're going to think they look great because this is an audio podcast and you're just going to take my word for it. But, so you do, besides the story, what did you do?
So I am the co-creator, writer, I'm also the publisher, and I do the production and the lettering. I work with some fabulous artists and colorists that have been in the industry for a long time. Starting with Jason Johnson, who drew the Resistance miniseries. He's been working in comics for over 20 years. He got his start with Wildstorm, Jim Lee's studio, back in the day. He started as an intern, actually, and went on to draw books like Wetworks and Gen 13 and Wildcats. Did some work for DC here and there, went into the video game industry and came back, and I happened to be in the right place at the right time for him. And then our second artist, Ben Herrera, is another guy who got his start in the mid-90s, actually doing a little work for Extreme Studios, Rob Liefeld's studio at Image, and then went on to do Marvel work for X-Men, X-Men Adventures, and again, another person who went to the video game side, had to come back to comics, and I caught him at the right time.
Not bad. No wonder it looks so good. And you create your own imprint, Big Blue Comics, right?
Yeah. Originally, when I self-published these characters 20 years ago, we were Blue Comics. And so when I brought it back, I knew I wanted some type of tie to what we had before, but to kind of show that we're taking a step up, and big seemed the way to go.
Bigger, better, and
right. So Big Blue Comics right now is me. Every once in a while, my co-creator, Jason Krause, he will help with some design work here and there. I have my girlfriend and my mom proofread and look things over for me. But for the most part, Big Blue Comics is me.
Now you're up to, the third issue three, or
so it's actually issue two because we did a zero issue, which you know is confusing to everybody outside of comics. But so we have three issues of the Resistance out right now, and then our second series, issue one of Hyper Action, is a double feature flip book that features individuals or stories of the individual members of the Resistance, plus a bounty hunter or mercenary that inhabits their world, to kind of expand on the universe of the Resistance.
So you are going to do the kind of expanded universe that seems to be popular these days, and, you know, there are more people in like that? Or I mean, well, given the, how much time it's been in your head,
right,
you've had more time to a lot.
Right. We have my co-creator and I, when we were kids and created these characters, we created a ton of other concept that all took place in the same universe. It all starts with the Resistance, and I like to call it... I plan on expanding the universe. It's not necessarily a shared universe because you won't have all these different titles. After Hyper Action, we'll come back to the Resistance and then maybe go back to Hyper Action and kind of flip back and forth. So there shouldn't be more than one book a month to follow these characters in this universe.
It, going back to your imprint, is there a reason why, could you explain to me, did you try to shop your stories around, or I mean, there's a reason. How did you get to the point where you said, "Screw it, I'm making my own"? You know.
Well, I guess that I started with the "Screw it, I'm making my own." I'm a DIY guy, and I always want to do it myself because I, you know, that old saying: if you want it done right, you got to do it yourself. I did submit to Image Comics. I shot for the moon. They did not get back to me. And so at that point, I didn't really see other companies giving me much of what I needed because I can deliver a finished product. So outside of distribution, I don't think that there's much that other companies really bring to the table.
So it's like if you don't have a finished product, they won't help you make a finished product.
A lot of companies nowadays want you to A, self-finance, and B, have a couple issues before they'd consider taking it on. That wasn't the issue for me, but because of those, because I can already do that, it just, the step of having a publisher as a go-between that's going to take half the profits wasn't really that appealing to me in the end.
So... in the end, do you like, I mean, are you enjoying this now? Is it like, has it become something you can do going forward and be enjoy it and, you know, not have it be like work?
Absolutely. Like that, I love making comics now and it's so rewarding. I want to make comics for the rest of my life and I'm bummed that I didn't do it sooner. Selling comics is a different thing.
Yeah.
Once you make the comic, you have to go to shows and try and sell it. You have to call shops, try and get into Diamond, and try and get some distribution so you can keep making comics. And that's not as fun, but it's a necessary evil that if I want to continue to make comics and write the Resistance, then that's something that I have to do along with it.
Very good. Now, yeah, so Great Philly Comic Con, are you going to be at any other conventions? Or?
Yes, I have booked 15 shows for this year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just got back from WonderCon in Anaheim. I'm originally from San Diego, or I live in San Diego, excuse me. I'm originally from Detroit, so I have kind of connections all through the U.S. I have a bunch of friends here from Boston and Philly, and that's why it brought me to here. Next week, I'm going to be in St. Louis. For Planicon, and then in May we're going to be back in Detroit for the Motor City Comic Con.
And you managed to get action figures, not dolls. How did you get to the point where you've even got action figures? Because a lot of we talked to a lot of independent creators, and to get to the point where they've got plastic on the table as well, that's kind of, you know.
Well, I had to make the comic first. The comic was way more important to me than the action figures. But I luck out because I'm a customizer myself. So I did G.I. Joe and Marvel Universe customs action figures for years. And so once, and like I said, I wanted to get the comic done first. Once I got the comic done, I had to do my three main characters. And but, you know, being able to do it myself is a huge advantage that other creators might not have.
Any words for anybody else who's trying to do the same thing? any wisdom that you've come across?
Perseverance. And it takes a lot of time. I hired an artist in 2015 for our first comic, and that was in August of 2015, and I waited until I had a few books done, but my first book just came out a few months ago. So if you think about the how long it takes, and if you want to get a couple issues in the can before you put something out, because if you're looking at other publishers, they'll be more confident, and readers are more confident. They know that you're not doing one book and then they'll never see it again. They know you'll finish the story. That was really important to me, but the whole process from the time of hiring an artist to getting a book out was about a year.
Where else can they find your comic books besides finding you at a convention?
Well, yeah, we'll be at 15 shows this year, most of the major conventions. And then, of course, BigBlueComics.com. You can order the books directly from us. And then we're on Comixology.com also. We have, I believe, 6 releases on Comixology.com now.
And keep in mind, this interview came about because I was asked if I liked
sci-fi comics.
Yes, and this is what you get. And
high action science fiction
in the future.
Yes,
in the future. All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with me.
Well, thank you.
And you know, we'll hope to see you at the conventions and see issue 3 and 4 come out. You know,
right on. Well, the original miniseries is only going to be 3 issues.
Okay.
And then Hyperaction, we're doing 4 issues. Okay. And then we're going to see how things go and hopefully a regular Resistance series after that.
Very good.
And hopefully we do this interview again at issue 50.
I will be around, that's for sure.
Right on.
So, all right, well, I wish you luck.
Thanks. Right.
Thank you.
Doesn't that give you hope, John, that, you know, yes, you may have had your idea for your book for 1,000 years, but eventually you can get it published?
Thanks. Also, yes, you're absolutely correct. And again, this was another very talented person. He's a writer. He does the lettering, and he managed to create his own imprint. And he's, I guess, he's basically starting his own publishing company. So, you know, it's really cool that these people have such drive. Speaking of drive, we'll move on to Josh Dahl, who is a friend of Kaminsky's. And actually, the reason why we have the interview with Josh Dahl is because Kaminsky told me, you know, you see that guy over there? You see that booth? Yeah, go over there and talk to him. And, you know, because of the painkillers, I just said, yes, master. You know?
Yes, blame the painkillers.
Yeah, now, I have these comics in front of me. I have I have 2 issues of The Resistance that I've read, and they're very good. Best type. There's only so many times I can say how good something is. So my advice to you is buy it.
Yes.
buy it and read it. And it's got legs. The other comics I have in front of me now are Rapid City Below Zero. I've got 2 issues of that. And I've got another one. I've got 3 issues of that. And then I've got Hyper Action featuring The Resistance, which was a collaboration with Kaminsky and Dahl. And Dahl's whole thing is bad is good. He loves writing about the bad guys. And this is, I guess, going along with, as we will talk about in the interview, this goes along with the big push for bad guys to have a backstory and be, you know, really fleshed out and, you know, in course, making them a hell of a lot more interesting than the actual good guys that they're fighting against. So what he's got is this Rapid City Below Zero is actually about the villains. And it's really, really cool. Specifically about this woman who has cold powers and how she's double-crossed and plans her revenge on the other villain that double-crossed her and killed all her friends.
That sounds like my ex-girlfriend.
Sounds like my ex-wife. So anyway, moving on. And these I've all read, and they are excellent. They really are. So without further ado, here is Josh Dahl.
Testing. Okay. Josh Dahl. Okay. So, I'm John O'Grady. I'm from Superhero Speak. And I am sitting here with Josh Dahl, who I was pointed at by another creator from here who did the Resistance and some of the Hyperaction. And what part did you play in that?
In Hyperaction. Well, I've been friends with Kyle Kaminsky since middle school. And we worked together on some comics a long time ago. And this kind of grew out of that. And what I did in Hyperaction was actually, Kyle had some pages that were drawn for an earlier series by Jason Howard, who's an amazingly talented artist. He did Super Dinosaur, he did Trees with Warren Ellis. We had the pages, which were a beautiful action sequence, and Kyle wanted to use them, but they were unscripted. So I did the pretty rare thing, comic writers almost never do this. I came to pages which had already been drawn and had to find a way to build character out of that, to build a narrative on top of the visual narrative that was already there, and add sort of a second life to it.
And you had these ideas for a very long time, you said, like way back when, 20 years or something? Or is that his?
Could be about 20 years, but that's Kyle. Kyle had those ideas. That's I just sort of came on to help him out.
Well, what else have you done besides Hyperaction?
I also write Rapid City Below Zero.
Okay.
It's a story about supervillains and the bad things that happen in their lives.
Oh, so you're going for the other side of things.
I love to write about bad guys. I love bad guys. Even in real life, I'm fascinated by people who do the wrong thing. So it's fun for me to write bad guys.
Well, they say, there is a current push to humanize all the bad guys. I mean, you have even Disney with the Evil Queen,
right?
But for the most part, humanizing them and giving them backstories has made them way more interesting than the heroes that they go after.
I think that's kind of true. Largely, a big part of it is they're proactive. The villains go out and do things, where typically, especially with superheroes, the hero waits for something to happen and then responds. Whereas the villain wants something and goes and gets it.
How long have you been writing?
A very long time. The first thing I ever remember writing was kind of a comic that I must have did when I was in kindergarten.
Kindergarten?
I think so. Yeah. Thinking back on it, yeah, something like that.
Okay, well, that's kind of like you were born for this then, I guess.
That's how I think of stories. I when I think of something, it's in the form of a comic book. So it's just, that's how it comes out.
All right, what was the first, real comic book that you wrote that you got into actual comic book form, and how hard was it to get that done?
When I did my first comic, it was with Micah Faulkner, who does the coloring on Rapid City Below Zero, okay, on the covers. When we did that, we did it so long ago that we were literally mailing pages back and forth. I would type up a script on my Apple IIe, print it out, tear the edges off the paper, mail him a script. He would draw pages and literally mail original artwork pages to me. That book eventually saw print again in the early days back in Detroit with Kyle Kaminsky and some other people there, in a different, kind of an earlier proto form of Kyle's company, Big Blue. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, was it hard? Of course, for those of that are listening that don't remember those days or probably weren't born for another 20 years, Apple IIc, Apple IIe, those were computers that were before the advent of email, technically. So,
right.
Yeah, and that's
before
back in the
email and before, menu-based browsing before Windows.
Yeah. So you literally were, I mean, it was Sneakernet. I mean, you were just pushing these pages back and forth through snail mail.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be really hard to coordinate something like this on.
We didn't know. We didn't know any better. We didn't know how to make comics. We didn't know the, like, we were just like, just do it. So, I guess the lesson from that is that was a little too hard because we stopped doing it. And then, you know, years later, kind of re-engaged, hooked back in, and can't get away from it.
So, you like writing about, not anti-heroes, but actual villains, right?
Yes. Though, you know, who knows how it's going to go? Anyone could be anything at any time.
Can you give me an example?
Of what?
One of your, like, villains that you write about?
One of my villains, this guy, Coyle, is the arch villain. He's, I heard an interview about, kids who grew up in orphanages in Russia where they were denied love and affection, and they all went insane and died. I forget the exact, but and it just got me thinking about what that kind of person would be like, and the secret genetics of Coyle's behavior are that he does not believe that love or trust actually exist. He does not believe in those things, and because he's never experienced them.
Wow.
And so his behavior, his
motivation, or
motivation a little bit, but just his reactions to things, to stimuli around him, come from the way, if you know someone is lying, the way it, like, irritates you and you want to draw it out. Mm-hmm. Where you're like, really? You were at the party all night? So, did you see, you know? So, that's how he responds when he sees people show love or trust to each other. It satisfies his worldview to break those things down. So, if he can show that some of this love or affection is phony, then he has, like, see, I told you there was no such thing as love. Because if he starts to understand that love exists, then he's been denied something. Then he realizes, oh, everyone does have this good feeling in their life, and I've never had it.
Okay. So really, really complex personalities and very...
The great thing about, like, that kind of complexity is it keeps flipping around. Like, it's complex, but it's so super simple. You know, and then it's so simple that it's like simple motivation, complex actions, right? At the core of it, you know, we're all the same. We're not so different. You know, when you do some shitty thing, it comes from the same place. You know, mm-hmm. when your friend invites you to a party and you're like, oh, you know what, I can't go. But you could go. You just don't want to go to that friend's party. You're being selfish. You're doing the same, like, you're hurting your friend's feelings and you don't care because... You know what? Because you went to a party last year. Like, whatever it is. You're being a bad person a little bit. And you justify it in your head by saying, I don't know how you... You know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah,
people
yeah.
justify their own negative behavior.
Yep.
It's just these guys have superpowers and live in a culture where it makes sense to put on a costume and hurt people.
Okay. Well, you're the second independent comic that I've seen that looks absolutely gorgeous. How did you manage to get, I mean, what was the process like trying to find artists and inkers?
The process of finding artists is horrible and soul crushing until this little ray of sunshine walked into my life, Sean Langley. It's really hard to find, it's really hard to establish, like, a collaborative relationship with an artist. Mm-hmm. It just is. Sean is terrific. He's great to work with. He bangs out beautiful, beautiful work.
Oh, yeah. It looks amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah.
Okay. And Are you having fun doing it? I mean, it's like, this is your primary thing in life that you do, and
this is my favorite thing. When Sean posts a new page, when it's like something from my imagination that I wrote in a script, and then it ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding comes through Sean Langley's eye and pen, and it's gorgeous. It's my favorite thing.
Very cool. So how many issues do you have so far?
There are 5 issues of Rapid City Below Zero. Issue number 5 ends the first story arc. When all is done, it'll run 12 issues to tell Icicle's complete story. And issue number 5, we just took out of the shrink wrap this morning. This afternoon. And it's gorgeous.
Your own imprint, is it?
Yeah, it's my own publishing company, Monolith.
I'll ask the same question that I asked your friend over there. When you did your own imprint, was it because you had problems trying to shop your ideas around to other of the larger comic book places or the larger publishers? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. At this level, okay, so if you can do something, if you can go with Image or something like that, if you can walk through the door and get that done, that's great. At the level below that, where I'm actually shopping around to publishers you see here and things like that, a lot of them can't do much more than I can already do. A lot of them will, you know, slap the label on it and, you know, bring you to shows and put you out there, but you're still on the hook to pay the artist. You're still on the hook to, and I'm not trying to, like, disrespect them at all. That's the game. That's how you do it. But it was just most of what a small publisher can do, I can do. So I just did it.
Okay. Oh, very good. Where can people find all of your work? Your comics. Where can they buy them besides at shows? Here's a question. How many shows are you going to be at this year?
As many as I can. I'm going to be at C2E2 in Chicago. I'm going to be at Motor City Comic Con. It looks like I might do Boston Comic Con. I'm going to do Metacon in Minneapolis. Sean, do you want to do Metacon?
Where's Metacon?
Minneapolis.
Maybe.
It's in September, first weekend in September.
You mentioned that before.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm doing that one.
It's that easy, huh?
Want to do it? Sure. Okay.
No, it's not that easy. No.
I hate flying. They have to pull the BA Baracus and drug me up, get me on a plane.
Oh, okay.
We could.
Don't drink the milk.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. I've got a plan, actually. Let's talk.
You have a plan?
I have a plan.
Does it involve drugs?
Let's just say I have a plan. So, as many conventions as I can. There's one or two which I know are coming together, but haven't really been announced. Oh, I'll be at Plastic City in Leominster, Massachusetts. I'll be doing, gee whiz, I don't know, a whole bunch.
Do you like doing the all these comics conventions? You're doing it to sell and get the word out on your comics, but.
Yes. I love doing it. I love this because it's... So when Sean and I are collaborating on this, that's Sean Langley, brilliant artist Sean Langley. When Sean and I are collaborating on the book, it goes back and forth and back and forth. I write the script, I rewrite the script, I move it around a little bit. Sean reads it, we go back and forth, he does a sketch, and it's all a really long, mushy process. But the convention is where, like, the rubber hits the road. And it's all or nothing right now.
Yeah.
If I don't do it today or tomorrow or Sunday, it's not getting done. The making the sales, making the connections, meeting the people. Like if I'm having a bad day, screw it. I don't get to have a bad day. I have a good day. And it's like during the whole of the collaborative process, something else is going on. Some other pressure in my life. I can't get that done this week, Sean. Okay. Sean, I got to do something. Okay. The convention, it's go time.
Yeah.
And you gotta do it right now. And I love that. I love the I don't know, the matador aspect of it, just
staring down the bull,
the roar of the crowd,
yeah,
the like
no choice but to.
When that bull moves, you gotta do your thing.
Yeah.
You can't do a do over. So yeah, basically this is exactly like bullfighting.
I that's the first time I've heard it described like that. It's very interesting. Yeah. So where else besides the conventions, as I was originally asking,
yes,
can they find your comics and your work?
BelowZeroComic.com is the webpage. We do most of our stuff on Facebook, though. I'm easy to find on Facebook. Josh Dahl, Rapid City Below Zero. It's there.
Okay. And what about Sean Langley? Is he got places he wants people to go?
I don't think Sean sells any of his work. He draws it. No, Sean, what's your webpage?
It's on the card. I'm sure that's going to be easy for you to see through the the podcast.
SeanLangley.com.
SeanLangley.com. Okay. Yep. All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And, you know, I wish you luck on your comic books. They look awesome. I'll post pictures of them with this interview.
Thank you.
And, you know, we'll hopefully see you in the future.
I'll be here. I'll hopefully, yes.
Excellent. You can hear the evil in his voice.
Oh. Yes, this one has given in to his feelings of anger and revenge. But in this case, it's a good thing. We get to benefit from it. And in the meantime, good comics are
yes,
made.
Yes, and actually, you said something right before we played the interview that I think is very important. You know, if you guys have any interest in, you know, any of these creators that were present on the show, then you definitely should go and check their books out, because, you know, independent is they need your support, and if the ideas are good enough and they get picked up, then eventually these will be the next TV shows and movies and you know, big ideas that are out there, and we can stop complaining about DCB doing too dark and Marvel controlling everything.
Yeah, I mean, and this this is really doubly true, because like, say, Xenoscope was at the convention for mm-hmm. the first time, and you know, I got to chatting with one of them, and it reminded me that you know, they actually, Xenoscope has a TV show out right now based on Robin Hood, Van Helsing. Yes. That's it. Yeah, Van Helsing. So, which the first season was actually really good, and I can't wait to see the second one, because the cliffhanger sucked. I mean, the cliffhanger was really good, and it sucks that would be the last one. I want to see what happens. But he, even the smaller imprints now are getting movies or TV shows.
Exactly. So, you know, again, if you like an idea, go check the book out and support your independents, because they need your help.
Yep. If you want any of these books, information will be with the podcast on our website. Also, at the ends of each interviews, we've made sure we've asked each of the creators to give us, or, you know, to name the places where you can find their work. But definitely visit our site in order to get the information directly from us where to go find them.
And what is that site? Them. Is that superheroespeak.com?
No, not at all.
Yes.
It's readallourads.com.
No, it's superheroespeak.com. And of course, and that's another thing that we don't usually mention, but, you know, if you have any thoughts, questions, comments about anything we've talked about on the show, you can reach any of us through our email. You can reach John at john@superheroespeak.com.
Oh, bring the hate mail on.
You can reach Ben at ben@superheroespeak.com. And you can
bring the beard, the freaky beard fetish people on.
You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
Geek stuff. Just send the geek stuff. That's all.
You know, so I mean, yeah, if you got questions, comments, something we haven't talked about you'd want to see us cover, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, until how many more interviews do we have left?
There will be one more episode, boys and girls, with three wonderful interviews on there. And one of them is a repeat guest, one of our favorite repeat guests. And the other two, ha 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 ha, is a mini Babylon 5 reunion.
Oh, dear goddess.
So until then.
I tripped on them too. It just, you know, I'm really clumsy that way.
So until then, boys and girls, don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week. Are you strong enough to stop a stupid movie rumor?
Are you more powerful than a bad comic book event?
Are you able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have got absolutely nothing better to do?
Then join the conversation by connecting with us on Facebook, Twitter, Slack, and other social media platforms.
And help us get our capes from getting stuck in the door by becoming an official Patreon patron.
And if you just want more content from us, don't forget to check out our website where we post way more than we can discuss here.
So what are you waiting for? When you join our fight, everyone wins.